What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends, Larry Rifkin and John Kropsik once again, and thank you for continually coming back episode after episode, and we try never to disappoint. Now, there may be some topics that people say, well, that one's not for me, but just wait a moment, because we publish two a week, and we're pretty confident that the next one will grab your attention, John.
And this one will certainly grab your attention, I believe.
Well, John, you know a lot about this next one, because you've been reading the book, The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change, by a gentleman by the name of Bruce Nagy. And I loved talking with him. A very fine gentleman. And he's somebody who, again, doesn't kind of throw a lot about climate change at you and ask you to, you know, buy every element to it.
No, he does it the right way. He's actually living it.
Right, exactly. And he's saying, no matter what, and you've said this, John, over the years, because you and I have perhaps differed a little bit about climate change. I've been less skeptical than you. But with that, he said, regardless, and you've said it, regardless of what you believe, if you want to have an energy efficient home and you want to do well by the environment.
You don't want to burn money.
Yeah. Like, or you don't really want to burn fossil fuels, because there's lots of elements about it that, whether you believe that it's burning up the atmosphere or not, it's not good for us.
It's not, you're right. We don't want to pollute our way out of the world here. We want a clean world. So it's important that we start thinking about these things, no matter what you think about global warming.
And Bruce does a really good job of breaking it down. There are chapters in this book that may relate to you if you're a government official or you run a business, but then there's a whole lot for those of us who have homes. And John, I was really impressed when we talked to him, and he's from Canada.
He got rid of his furnace.
He has no furnace.
He has
in
no
Canada.
Furnace in Canada, yes.
So right
it's
now,
amazing.
He's sitting with 12 layers of clothing around a wood stove.
And his wife and kids have
frigid.
Left him.
No, actually, he'll tell you what he did and what you can do. And he says it's not that much more expensive these days if you're starting out that way.
Right.
Now, retrofitting may be a little bit more cumbersome. But anyway, he gives us a whole lot to think about.
Even still, I mean, there's a lot in the book. There's a lot of things that, small things we can do to save energy and say, you know, there's so much, all these little transformers we have, we plug in for our phone and stuff, we should put them on switch so that we're not wasting electricity, because they're still burning electricity even though they're not plugged into your phone. I mean,
things. I just saw something the other day that I didn't know anything about. Amazon has put together this thing called the Smart Plug.
Uh-huh. I haven't heard this, but...
And it's, I think, about $25, and you plug in an appliance, and it becomes a smart appliance.
Wow.
And so it will shut off and turn on, basically, by using this smart plug without you redoing your whole home and making it into a smart home.
Wow. I'll have to look into that. But,
no, really,
you know, I'm really scared if my appliances get too smart. They may attack me or something, you know?
They may.
I don't always treat them well.
Yeah, but maybe they can help you do your taxes this year. Excuse me, Mr. Lamb. Well, anyway, so that we don't get too silly here, why don't we get right on to Bruce Nagy, because he's got a lot of great information
great
to share
stuff.
With you. It's called, again, The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. Bruce Nagy is on the line with us. He's written a great book called The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. Now, one might imagine, Bruce, that you have been bought into the whole concept of climate change for a very long time. But the truth is, you've been a little bit reluctant for a period of time, necessarily, to believe that it was man-made and that it was the great threat that it is. Where have you come from, and how, over what period of time have you changed your mind about this issue?
Well, I don't know that I ever disbelieved any of the climate science, but I, like many people, just ignored it for a long time. And I was pursuing the American dream. I was an ad agency creative director. I was going, you know, I was driven for by materialism. And I, but I had a conscience, and I didn't. I grew up in a family that loved to go camping and go to the cottage, and we had a respect for nature. So one day I was yelling at the TV, and my five-year-old son looked up at me, and I was railing on about how the government wasn't doing anything about pollution, and he said, "But we're different, aren't we, Dad? We're doing something about this." And that gave me pause for thought. Because I wasn't doing very much.
Well, what do you think the average person is doing? I mean, we've got a lot of disbelievers out there. We've got the head of government suggesting that it may be a ruse. So what is the average American, for example, really doing to fight off climate change, if anything?
Well, the average American isn't doing enough, but I want to qualify that by saying a lot of the new directions in the recent few years are very positive. There just isn't enough momentum. So in other words, we are moving in many good directions, according to me, and the priority areas that I've sort of designed my book to talk about. And I designed them based on, not according to me, but 700 experts that I've, since my son said that, interviewed for 150 clean energy articles. And those experts, along with the International Energy Age, have identified three general areas. And those are buildings, vehicles, and power plants. Because they together make up about 70% or 75% of our emissions in almost every country. So that's why I designed the top 10 lists in my book around those three priorities. And in America, there is good progress in all three of those areas, particularly this year in the electric vehicle area, because 300,000 electric vehicles cars will be sold in America this year, which is astounding, and it's twice what we sold in 2017, and you know, 30% growth each year, 25% growth each year. So to go to 100% growth is pretty exciting.
Well, let me step back about the consciousness of not only the American public, but also the business interests in America, because you point out that solar and wind power costs are dropping. So the question really is, are people beginning to adapt because companies are pushing them in that direction and the costs are going down? Is that a big part of this?
With regards to electricity, there are a bunch of things happening at the same time. First of all, the economics is the obvious driver. You know, I think, and it's easy to say Americans aren't doing enough, but I think human beings in general are weekend environmentalists. We worry about our mortgages, we worry about our children's tuitions, and we, on Sunday, think about ethical questions, and that's just human, that's survival, and I think now what's happened is that the economics are driving, as they so often do, change. And the economics in the case of electricity are that now wind and solar farms, along with storage and smart grid technology, are better and cheaper than coal and gas for making electricity. So investors are walking away from it. Energy planners in many countries are walking away from coal and gas. And then in America, a couple of other things have happened. The big Googles and Alphabets and Apple and all those large sort of California companies, I guess, have been buying started to buy their electricity directly from generators when utilities started to resist the new way. And they started signing power purchase agreements directly, and that sort of helped to force the hand of the utilities to go, oh, we better get with the program, we better do things more in a more modern way. Similarly, Americans started putting solar panels all over their roofs and generating their own electricity and putting Tesla batteries in their basement. And that also started to put pressure on the utilities. At first, they fought it in court and tried to charge the solar people money. But now it's sort of, hey, we better get with the program.
The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change, and Bruce Nagy is with us. And Bruce, I love the way the book is laid out, because if there's a certain area for business owners and you're not a business owner, then you can avoid that. But then I'd like to focus on the top 10 clean energy solutions as it relates to homeowners, because I think most of the people listening to the podcast are homeowners, if not business owners. And let's start with number one, focus first on optimizing the building envelope. Now, a lot of people know about Tyvek and some of these insulating materials, or if we saw a new home being built within the last 15 or 20 years, we saw that we wrapped it up. What are you talking about as it relates to the envelope?
Okay, well, all across America now, thousands of passive house and net zero buildings are being built. It started as a house here and a house there, but now actual subdivisions are going in, and they are zero energy or very close to it. And you know, if you can put a man on the moon, you can build a well-sealed house, and you can use small, clean technology to heat it or cool it. And that's exactly what a net zero house does. If you live, I live in the north in Canada where it's cold, I don't need a furnace now. Other people live in the south in Texas or Florida or California, and they don't need the huge cooling system that they always have thought.
Now, Bruce, back up for most of us who have an oil tank still in our basement. You don't need a furnace in Canada?
Not if you have a properly sealed house that has maybe a passive house standard. Now, what is a passive house standard? It's a very thick wall with a lot of super insulation. It's triple pane, argon-filled windows, and it's something called an HRV, a heat recovery ventilator that provides fresh air into that very well-sealed house, but retains the heating energy, and also a heat pump, an air source heat pump. Maybe it's a ground source heat pump if you have lots of money. And you don't need any fossil fuels to heat that house. You can do it with a small amount of electricity, because a passive house standard actually reduces the energy requirements for heating a home by 80% to 90%. And that's, you did not mishear me. And that's an amazing technology that not very many people know about, except the construction industry. And the construction industry, as we know, is very slow to change, but it is changing.
That is absolutely remarkable, Bruce. I mean, it really is. And how expensive is it to build a home from scratch with these materials that are zero energy involved?
Well, 10 or 15 years ago, I would have said 30%, but today there are many projects that are doing it for the same price, the same cost as a conventional home. I would say the average project that I've written about in my articles in the last 3-4 years has been 5 or 10% higher. I think one of the big challenges is that new construction is one thing, and many of the cities are changing their building codes. In the next 10 years, you'll have to have a zero-energy building. But that's only 3% of our building stock. So I think the big challenge for us with climate change is the 90% of buildings that already exist and are, you know, being heated or cooled with fossil fuels and are, you know, not very well-sealed, and they're wasting energy.
So what do we do about looking at our homes and trying to make certain that if we're not going to leave them and start all over again, that we can make them more efficient? Number two, you say switch to clean, efficient heating and cooling.
Right. Well, I think what we need to do is we need to undertake some not very fun in terms of money changes, but there are solutions at hand. So, for example, if we did a geothermal system, which is a ground source heating or cooling system, it would cost us, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 in the U.S. and that's nobody really, well, not a lot of people do not have that kind of money laying around, and they're not going to contemplate that investment unless they have help. So many states have some incentives, but many do not. And my campaign is to get states who do not have incentives to either introduce them or, and something which is more palatable to both sides of the so-called political spectrum, just do funding, just do financing, because surveys are showing that homeowners will undertake these big changes if they can just get help with the upfront costs, and if that financing, that loan, can be structured so that the savings cover the payments. And the savings will cover the payments. Almost all the clean energy options pay for themselves in about a third of the life of the equipment. So, for example, a solar array on your roof, and the average one pays for itself in 7.5 years in America, or in jurisdictions where they have grants, even less. 4 or 5 years.
Now, we know that California seems to be a state unto itself in terms of adopting new standards and requiring that we go into this future with a government really behind the effort. And yet we're also hearing that Texas, which has so much in the way of fossil fuels, is pretty aggressive as it relates to clean energy, too.
Yes, they're number one in wind in the nation, and they're number five in solar in the nation for generating electricity. It's a bit surprising, and it might explain why the Republican-controlled Congress extended the tax credit for another 5 years, because, you know, the people who are getting wealthy in clean energy are not talking about it. They're just keeping it to themselves.
I guess so. Well, when you look at all of this, I mean, the average American today, if they go out shopping for ways to retrofit their own homes, will they find a lot of good contractors and suppliers if they can afford to do it, or if the financing is there or the incentives by government? Is it really worth, what would you say do first, and what would you say perhaps can go a little bit later in the process?
Okay, those are very good questions. Thank you. The first one is, are there a lot of contractors? The answer is yes and no. Yes, there are a lot if you look for them, but no, not by percentage. So you need to look for them. If you, as I do, attend the trade shows and the conferences, then you'll realize that it's a huge movement all across the United States to build better energy homes. So there are lots of contractors, experts, specialists, people who've been doing it for 30 years. But you got to find them, you got to ask the right questions, and it's like buying anything else. Do not do something foolish, because you'll only have yourself to blame. Ask how many they've installed. You know, do your homework online. All the information is available. The other thing you asked is, what should we do first? And we, you and I just touched on it a few minutes ago. The envelope should come first. It's not as exciting as a solar array or a geothermal install, but why would you waste money on a lot of big equipment if the heating or cooling is just going right out the cracks? So you have to do your envelope first, and then you will find that in many cases you don't even need that geothermal for $20,000. You can do it for $5,000 or $6,000 with the heat pumps.
And again, that's in the north as well as the south. That's for cooling and heating.
Well, heat pumps have been in Asia and Europe for 25 years, and most of the market in those two regions is heat pumps. However, they're fairly new to North America, and in the last 10 years, there's been a big change, because as the European companies tried to penetrate the North American market, there was resistance in the construction market, and one of the things that the construction market in North America did was say, hey, they won't work in cold weather. They don't have cold weather performance. So the manufacturers had to go back to the design drawing board, and they made them work in cold weather. So now they're much better. So you may hear some information that says, oh, they don't work in cold weather, but it's changed a lot in the last 5 years, I would say.
Now, people are doing various things like replacing old lighting with LED, using power strips, you recommend that, adding drain water heat recovery to your shower pipe. I'm not certain how many people have done that, or low flow plumbing. I mean, there are a lot of things that you can do fundamentally that aren't, major capital items, but will have an impact.
Yes. And I tend to be a very practical person. I don't think I'm going to convince too many people by saying it's the right thing to do, but I think I could convince more people by saying it's the smart thing to do. So I tend to put the big items at the top that will have the most impact both on the on climate and on your pocketbook in the long run. But those ones that you mentioned, like the drain heat recovery, they're down further because they'll save less. But they do pay out. And like a drain heat recovery unit, it basically preheats the incoming cold water by using the heat energy that goes down your, literally down your drain when you're taking a shower. You also mentioned LED lighting, and I wanted to sort of switch the focus a little to companies.
Sure.
One of the first things that a corporation does when it has green programs is an LED lighting upgrade. And why do they do that? Because they pay out the best. An LED lighting upgrade in a company usually pays out in the first year. Okay, so after, if you're saving 50 or 70% of your electricity after the first year, you keep saving it every year, and it's already been paid for. The capital budget of the first year paid for the whole upgrade.
Ultimately, down the road, will we all want to be selling back power to the electric companies? Is that a goal that we all should have so that we can go off the grid, so we can become our own energy suppliers, in a sense? Because I do love the term that you use, the phrase, that in this process of climate change, there are no innocent bystanders. We've all got to participate.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's the environmental side of me, but we also can all participate and save and get benefits, as you suggested. Will we all be selling? Well, the idea of selling back to the grid is sort of part of the FIT program, the feed-in tariff program, that is an incentive of many governments. And many of the incentives are going to have to be phased out because they're designed to attract attention to a technology and help a government to intervene in a positive way. However, having said that, the future, I've been doing stories on smart grid lately, and I've been talking to the really advanced IT people who are figuring out how to make our grid be able to accept millions of people coming home and plugging in their electric car at night.
Yeah.
And I've been learning that there will be always some programs where batteries, either home batteries or car batteries or neighborhood community batteries, will store energy, and it'll be moved around all over the place. And in many of those cases, there will be dollar signs attached to that. People are going to do it. They're not going to do it for free, and that applies to you, whether you're an individual, a company, a government. So there are all kinds of programs also being invented for the sharing of power, all different directions. And the term smart grid includes the upgrading of our grid so that power can move back and forth in different directions with intelligent communications over the line, where you can actually identify what's where.
Now, we've been told that we've got very old infrastructure, and we're talking to you from the Northeast here in America, and the Northeast is the oldest part of the country. Are we going to have a difficult time retrofitting? Is there a lot of lag in terms of innovation in this area? And what do you see propelling it over what period of time?
Well, I do think that's a complex question and difficult to answer and predict, but I will say this. Many people don't realize that for many years, the electrical industry has been meeting every year and every quarter to discuss this challenge and has been beating the drum with their governments to get infrastructure dollars. And in some cases, they've succeeded, and they are constantly upgrading. So the grid is upgrading, but like so many things, some of the poorer people will have to wait longer just because they live in areas where perhaps the density is less, so they're not at the top of the priority list. So, and they may never get to the top of the priority list. So, you know, it's not without its problems, that's for sure. and they are huge challenges. But I guess to some extent, it is also being alleviated by the consumer imperative, because we are buying these electric cars, we are buying these home batteries, we are buying these solar panels. So we're changing the way electricity is done, and at the same time, we're modernizing it.
When you look at the three key priorities that you have referenced, buildings, power plants, transportation, is there one of these areas where we're clearly showing advances, others where we are lagging? I mean, perhaps it's in the buildings, because 90% of them are built and they're not going to be rebuilt, and right, they're not going to have zero energy impact.
Yes, I think we have the most progress, believe it or not, in power plants. And I'm talking on a global scale. The switchover isn't what it could be, but the political will to switch over, and the economic, the investor will to switch the energy industry to clean energy, is definitely there, even in America, where the news suggests otherwise. So I think we're most advanced in the power plant area, even if not actually intentionally. I think the cars are starting to catch up to the power plants very quickly. We now have 3 million vehicles on the road, 300 million vehicles on the road worldwide, which are 3 million, sorry, electric vehicles on the road worldwide, and that's a big switch. And the car companies, they're all making announcements about phasing out internal combustion engines. So I think that's number two. The third one, as you correctly identified, is the construction industry and the buildings. It's just never been a fast place for change. And as I discussed earlier, the renovation problem, the retrofit problem, is the biggest one we face. But it's also a highly visible area, and it's also an area in which ordinary citizens can make a difference. And I think we just have to buckle down, all of us. I mean, we have in the past overcome societal problems like we did with OPEC in the 70s, and I think we can do this.
Well, I think your book is remarkable with all the top 10 lists. And as you said, you've taken it and gleaned it from so many sources. And I think today you've expressed yourself so well in terms of these topics that people know that you've ingested a lot of information to get to the point where you can talk about buildings, electricity, transportation, business, investment, politics and economics, government, what they all need to do. And you've got these top 10 lists. And I've got to say, it's a really incredibly practical guide. The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. Bruce Nagy, I want to ask you in closing today, and I'd love the opportunity to talk with you again. If you looked at all of this and you look at what you see happening in terms of the climate, how much time do we have, as you see it, to kind of get moving on some of these things?
Oh, I wish I was a climate scientist. I'm not. I don't know. They're saying we have 12 years. We don't know what their agenda is. Maybe they're trying to sound the alarm a little bit. I don't know. And I think it's a very, very complex area with a lot of moving parts. It would be hard for even the smartest scientist to predict. But I think it also is obvious just from, you know, the weather out there, the storms, the statistics. There's not a single insurance company executive anywhere in the world who is not an environmentalist. They know the stats. They know about the storms. They know about the glaciers melting. You know, they know about the forest fires. So we put it this way, we don't have very much time, but that is not a reason to throw up our hands and say we can't do it. The human race has always been innovative, the human race has always been resourceful, and the human race has always overcome its problems. Let's not give up now. Let's get out there and fight the fight. I think we can do it.
Well, I know anyone listening to this podcast likes to read. If they did get your book, would you point them in various directions at different areas of the book that they should really attack with a great deal of intent?
Well, I don't think that I need to be that prescriptive. I think what you said about it having different sections for different people is exactly what I intended to do. I think people have to take from it what they can get. And for example, if they take a top 10 list and they look at it and it's maybe a top 10 list for an urban planner, they might know more about urban planning than I do, and they might say, oh, I'm going to rewrite this top 10 list, and you know what, that's great. I don't care about that. I just want everyone to have a personal plan and take some personal responsibility.
Bruce Nagy, I can't thank you enough. An incredible book, wonderful information, important information that we all need to know, and you have sounded the alarm for me, and hopefully I will be able to enact a good portion of that top 10 list in my own home. Thanks again for being part of America Trends today.
Well, thanks for your kind words, and thanks for having me.